So, you know how we've been hankering to get a MeUndies sponsorship since like episode three?
Yeah, I know. We have all these sponsorships, but I just really want to nab that MeUndies one.
You
That'll be
know,
grandma money for us.
I have pitched them. I have talked about their socks on our podcast before,
Yeah,
and they no longer have them, Ian. They no longer have the Micromodal socks. So fuck you, MeUndies. Go to
Okay.
hell.
I have something to say about the world. This is Ian's like Andy Rooney soapbox rant. I don't get the socks thing, millennials. Like,
Like wearing socks?
no, I mean I like so I mean but like I have never bought socks that weren't just from Costco. I guess this makes me just sound like a boring white dude, but like my cousin like comes out to visit and we go into the city and his favorite place to go is like the little tourist fronts that have like 300 different kinds of weird socks in them with like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and pot leaves and shit on them. And like
Oh, these
that's
were white socks that I was
Oh,
talking about.
okay. So you're just talking about high quality socks. I
They
thought
were
we were talking about some
comfortable.
kind of like fashion socks. The sock thing, man. I don't get the sock thing. All these young people are to socks now.
I just got these patterned dress socks off of Amazon, and I'm pretty excited about them though. So I guess I am part of the sock thing.
Well, welcome back to Sock Talk. I'm Ian. This is Bobby.
You're wrong with Ian and Bobby. You're wrong.
Sock talk
And
with
we're
Ian and
gonna we're gonna get
Bobby.
into the elastic corner in just a second here, but when I was a kid, I was a very obsessive person, and I entertained myself by pulling the elastic out of my socks and making it into bouncy balls that I would play with at recess, and it drove my mom crazy because
And then
she
your
wouldn't buy
socks
me
would
new
just fall
socks.
off.
Yeah, they would just like not work anymore. And I don't think I ever admitted to her that's what I was doing, but I'm sure she was like, "What is this?"
Did you know that you could do the same thing with rubber bands, Ian?
Well, it wasn't just me. This was like one of those weird things that like a kid in our class came up with during an assembly, and then everybody started doing it. But I like was an obsessive personality, so I kind of kept doing it after the assembly was over. It's just like I have bitten my nails for 15 years, and it's because when I was a freshman, I had never bitten my nails once in my life, and I was on the water polo team, and they checked my nails before the meet, and they were too long, and nobody had nail clippers, and so I had to bite them off, and it just like awoken a horrible habit in me that I've never shaken since.
Why do they check your nails in water polo?
It's super violent, and they want to make sure you can't scratch each other. It's like
You know
really
what? I forgot
strict.
what
You have
water
to
polo was
have.
for 2 seconds. I'm like, aren't you just swimming
Oh.
laps? Oh, yeah. No, that
I mean,
makes sense.
I only did, in Bobby's defense, I did swim for 4 years, and I only did water polo for 3 months. I'm not an aggressive person. It was not the sport for me.
One of the most hurt I've ever been, I might have actually said, I know I've definitely said this to you, but I might have said it on the podcast,
I
was,
already know what you're gonna say, and it's because I'm like, this is me. This is like angry 15-year-old Ian, assuming he's being made fun of, like immediately. But go
Well, and to be fair, 15-year-old Bobby would have given you no reason not to believe that he was about to make fun of you.
ahead.
But you had mentioned to me for the first time that you were on the water polo team,
Right.
and maybe it was because I was a little surprised and intimidated because I'm like, wait, we're friends because we're both geeks. You can't do something athletic, you know?
Well, I definitely wasn't in water polo when we first met. That was way before we met. I only was doing swim by that point. But
Okay,
I
well that
was
okay
yeah.
still. But then
Yeah.
I said I asked you, I'm like, do you have to wear a Speedo? And then you just sighed and you went, yes, and funnier people than you have made jokes about it. And it was just the two of us talking, but it was like you ripped off my pants in
That
front of
sounds
everyone.
that says a lot more about me and how I perceived the world and expected people to react to me at 15 than it does about you. That
It
also
wasn't
says
just
a
like,
lot
please don't make
about
fun of me. It
every
was,
well
fuck
that also
you,
says
I've
a
heard better jokes than the one you're about to say. Go to hell.
well I was just the most sensitive kid in the world. And I mean, you and I are both, I think, people who have in our adult age realize like we don't really have a lot of need or want for like hang out with like eight dudes who are all just being mean to each other. But like you do go through that in high school, like you figure out like what the level of meanness is that's okay. And I just wasn't cool with any of it. Like I was so sensitive in high school that I just assumed everyone was like trying to murder me by by feelings, you know?
I was, we should say this right away, I was a bully in high school, you know?
Okay, says the guy who I, like, threw pencils at every day. Like, we just fucked with each other. We were not, I don't think either of us were bullies to each other.
Oh, no, I'm fucking with you. I was whatever the opposite of a bully was.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant to me. I thought you were saying...
No,
you,
like, if anything, I was the quiet, weird kid.
Yeah, well, I think we both were. I realized the other day, I kind of forgot about this. I, like, stopped telling people I liked comic books for most of high school, and I very clearly remember coming to school senior year with a comic book and that being, like, a really important personal choice for me, that I was going to, like, read that in front of people on campus.
This is as tragic a story I get in high school. So for the first year of high school, I went to...
you were walking down Crime Alley with your parents.
I was. I did not want to stay at the opera. Yeah. And I went to I don't want to call it a nerd school, but it was like a... It was a school that happened to be inhabited by almost exclusively nerds, because it was
Your school was called Oxford. Let's just say that.
Yeah, it was a academic-focused school. You had to take a test and maintain a GPA to stay in, and then I moved to the school that we both went to in sophomore year. And because of, you know, like, how I think nerds instinctively talk to each other in also popular culture, my thought was like, well, I'm going to go to this new school and get my ass kicked, because with all the normals... Putting aside that I was, like, very tall and very big and also very nice, you know, like, I was never going to get my ass
kicked. Have, like, such a skewed view of what high school is that you come in ready to be like, what's up, fuck idiot? Like, that,
right, exactly.
I don't know, just, yeah, like.
And so, Pokemon cards were, like, a big, big deal ninth grade, where I went to school, at least.
Right.
And I was just like, I cannot let on that I enjoy Pokemon at this new school, because that's not cool. And so I had been using as a bookmark in a book, it's not worth anything, and it wasn't a good card, but it was like a special edition Abra card from Nintendo Power.
They always, you always got these big, like, they, when Nintendo, or when Pokemon cards were huge, everybody was giving away holographic special edition cards that weren't worth anything.
Right.
I remember that. They were always in, like, cereal boxes and stuff, too.
And so I panicked, because I had been using this as a bookmark, and I opened my book and saw it, and I'm like, I have to leave that at home. I need to remember to leave that at home. And then during reading period in 10th grade, the card fell out of my book and onto the floor, and I didn't realize it. And the person next to me went, is that your Pokemon card? And I said, no. And he took my Pokemon card.
You denied your he took it! That's the best part, is that he wanted it. He wasn't even trying to make fun of you. He was like, can I have that? And you're like, it's not mine. I've never seen it before. Yeah. There is that weird... You have that thing in high school where you're like, oh, the things... Like, I'm not allowed to like things. Or if I do, it has to be, like, really fucked up stuff. Like,
There's something...
A lot of that.
I think we're trying... I think... Weirdly now, I think we're trying, because people are realizing that there's a section of bully culture, or not bully culture, geek culture, that is more insidious, and then, like, we're also kind of realizing that this myth that, hey, the people that picked on you when you were in high school are going to be losers, but since you're a geek, you're going to be awesome and successful in life. I think we're, starting to reckon with those, like, falsehoods, and so it's like, I wonder if... Soon we're going to start seeing new kind of, like, high school hierarchy, social hierarchy tropes in media, you know?
Yeah. I think what I've realized in the last 5 or 10 years, this is just for me personally. I don't mean this in a way that is, like, talking about bullying and being in people's head or anything like that. But I thought of myself as very bullied as a kid. I was a little bullied, but, like, I have this memory. This was, like, at the time... This was so traumatizing for me. I was in junior high, and I was in a very cool history teacher's class. This history teacher was the cool teacher. Now I have found out since that he used to, like, get high with all the high school students and stuff. Which is not.
Wait, what? What was this?
Yeah, I'll tell you who his name was after school. He was a junior high teacher. Who had a rep at the high school. But he was just kind of a hippie. I don't think he was actually, like, a predatory weird person. Too much.
Was he like the Kraz from
he kind of was, but he was actually a good teacher.
Okay.
Like, everybody you will talk to who went to who had his classes loved him. He was sincerely a good teacher. So I don't want to have that, like, anyway, I was in his class. We were talking about something. It was a history class. And he started talking about Star Wars as a metaphor for, like, fascism or something. Because it was a, you know, it's a history class. And I jumped on that fucking bandwagon because it's me. And I started being like, well, in Star Wars, the Imperials, blah, blah, blah. And the guy in front of me laughed, went, Imperials. And I, like, I felt like a hole opened in the ground and I fucking fell into hell. Like, that was so traumatizing for me. And I went home and was like, I'm never going to talk about Star Wars again. Like, and it was just some kid who thought it was funny that I said the weird word Imperials. Like, he wasn't trying to hurt me. He wasn't even thinking about me. He just, like, said this little thing. But I was so sensitive that I think a lot of my bullying was that. I was so, like, I just started self-policing because I didn't want to be paid attention to, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, and certainly, does that make sense?
Yeah.
By the way, again, I want to qualify that by saying, like, I'm not saying that people who are bullied are playing the victims.
Right,
that
right.
Not
and no,
what I mean.
People clearly are bullied for being different, you know? Like,
right, right.
People
obviously
do get their asses kicked.
And I was, and that happened to me. But yeah, also, like, I did just, I was so, you're so terrified at that age, or at least I was, of anybody looking at you, mm-hmm, that you're just, like, everything hurts. It's weird. And then you have to come out of it later and be like, oh, that wasn't the experience. That was, like, that was what I made the experience be.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Anyway,
so I think
anyway,
we
this solved,
was a good
solved
podcast.
Bullying. Hashtag be best.
Quit while we're ahead. And so, what are we talking about next week, Ian?
Well, what are we talking about today? Because I think this is, we're going to have to tackle quite a lot today. Do we want to hold off on that? And talk about, you know, kind of what we've been up to a little bit more.
Have you been up to anything?
Well, I've been mostly, been up to what we're going to talk about today. I did see Lego Movie 2, day, or Lego Movie, the second one. I forget what it's called. It's something weird like that.
I think it's the second part.
Second part. I liked it a lot. It's really good. I would say the only reason it's not as good as the first one is the concept is no longer surprising, but mm-hmm, they fulfill the concept in a way that I think is actually a little more interesting than the first one. And they do it very well, so I liked it.
Interesting,
very funny movie.
Yeah,
and it's a bit more of a musical. Tiffany Haddish is great in it as.
Oh, for so much.
Yeah, and I mean everybody's great in it, but it's solid. Yeah, I liked it quite a lot.
The first one is one of my favorite movies from recent years.
Yeah,
I love it
same,
so much.
Same.
I even really love Lego Batman. I think that's a very good movie, too.
I do also. It's a totally different kind of movie where, like, I would say, well, actually, no, they have a pretty similar sense of humor. I think the surprise still of the end of that first movie is
it's amazing. No, Lego Movie is definitely the stronger and more interesting movie.
Right,
I think
right.
What I love about Lego Batman is the moment in Batman then it came along and how
yes,
it decided to tackle Batman and his arc in that movie is
well it's
great.
Fun that we're at a point in nerd culture where we're finally kind of re-accepting Adam West and
yeah,
his contribution to like comic book world stuff because there was so much anger for so long about that kind of stuff, and so like to get to return to it in a fun way with things like that or Teen Titans Go, which we talked about last mm-hmm time, like that is fun. I like all that.
I love, and this is in both Lego Movie and Lego Batman, that
yeah,
Batman as presented is he is the child he was when he decided to take that candlelight
well,
oath.
Yeah,
you know?
He's a little kid playing being Batman.
Right. He's just all very, very simple emotions,
like,
just a ton of insecurity.
One of the best jokes in the sequel, which is in the trailer, so I'm not giving anything away, is he throws a batarang at one of the little sister Duplo things, and it goes, "You didn't hit me," and he goes, "Yeah, I did." But it's just it's funny because that's what like there's a version of Batman who is that, and it is funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's about it for me, actually.
I have two things. One of them ties cleanly in with this. I read mm-hmm or I audiobooked. The Cape. I think it's called The Cape Crusader and the Rise of Nerd
That's
Culture.
That's right. That's
by,
right. Yeah.
By Glenn Weldon, who's an NPR writer who is on the podcast Pop Culture Happy Hour, which I really like. And
which he recommended highly to me. I have not started it yet.
And so this book is good. It goes through kind of like every era of Batman. he wrote it around the time Batman v Superman came out, so that's where it ends. But it also charts
kind of the height of the character.
Right. You know, I think it actually, he talks about the trailer, so I don't even think it comes out. Because okay. He doesn't talk about the Martha thing, but he does talk about, do you bleed?
Right, okay.
But he also charts the rise of nerd culture and kind of like the fan base and their relationship with Batman and their expectations right. from the series. And it's really interesting. And I would even recommend the audiobook because Glenn has like a little too much fun doing everyone's voices.
Does he do all the voice? That's really
he does
funny.
Like whenever he does a quote from The Guardian, he does it in like a posh British accent because okay. he can. There's even a moment he quotes Devin Faraci from formerly wow. of Birth, Movies, Death, and he even does yeah. like a Devin Faraci impersonation, and I'm like, that's specific, but okay. But yeah, Glenn Weldon's writing is really good, and he's fun. So I really recommend that book.
Oh, I also wanted to just say briefly, somebody we talked about forever ago on the podcast, which was a YouTube essayist named Lindsay Ellis, that Bobby is a big fan of. I just kind of started following on YouTube recently, and I am also now a big fan of her. I think she's very smart and a very talented writer, and I like her stuff a lot, so I wanted to throw that out.
Have you been watching her videos?
I have not, but I've been following her on Twitter, and she's been writing a lot of interesting stuff yeah. on Twitter. She had some very, very fascinating things to say about kind of the cultural response to the Liam Neeson interview that happened this week that I thought were pretty solid. There's something else she was talking about last week, too, that I was really into. I forget what it is now.
The Liam Neeson interview, for anyone listening 100 years in the future, was actor Liam Neeson, for some reason, I have no idea. This is like the stupidest publicity
move of all
time.
Well, that's what her response was what was interesting about it is because I think what he was trying to do was create a redemption story for himself and allow others to feel like have the same response, but that's not what I mean. It was the wrong choice, and it was a really weird thing to talk about in an interview.
I think Liam Neeson started with because he's in a revenge movie right now, and right. I think he was even prompted like, "How do you channel that anger and that feeling of revenge?" And uh-huh. so he started to tell this story about how he, he allegedly has this friend who was raped by a black man.
Right.
And then he spends the next 2 months walking around with a bat trying to, like, hoping that...
I mean, he said the word murder, I believe. Right. He said, well, I was looking for a black...
And he's hoping that yeah. that some, you know, a black person will come up and provoke him so he can, right. like, he could kill them. And then you can hear, if you listen to the audio, in my opinion, you hear Liam Neeson realize how insane what he's saying sounds like. And he tries to back out, and the best way he can back out is to come up with a redemption arc for himself. And he just ends with, like, a very I don't want to say insincere, but, like, a very acted, yeah, it was terrible. I'm ashamed of it. It's terrible. Yeah. But I've learned. And I'm like, oh, geez, wow, okay. And then you can, whoever's next to him, I don't know if it's another actor or the director, just goes, holy shit. Like at the very end of it. Such an idiot. Cool.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I'm wrong about this. Is there something I'm not at all defending Liam Neeson or the other person I'm about to bring up. Is there some kind of maybe like different understanding of race in England? Because I had the same kind of thought with what happened with, what's his name? The guy from The Professional. What's wrong with me? Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman, a couple of years ago, like started saying some really weird racist shit in, and I'm just like, is there a different understanding of what is acceptable in British culture around race? Is that part of what's happening here? Like, because it's so strange to me that these, like...
I don't pretend to know that, but also I think if there is, that still sucks.
It's not, again, I am not trying to make excuses. I'm trying to figure out, like, why somebody who I would assume is a reasonably intelligent person would go on the air and, like, say that. I think the fact that we're openly talking about racism as a thing now is giving some people, like, they're taking that the wrong way. They're like, oh, let's like celebrate our internal racism so that we can like surpass it. And like, that's making it about you and not the people who are victims of racism in a weird way. But it's just, I don't know. It's strange. I don't know. You're right. There's no right answer to this.
There
it's
isn't. Just and I could live in his, like his statement. There are just so many places. Again, I think this is terrible and I think this is bad. And I don't even think it's honestly the worst, racial controversy in the past couple of weeks, because
no, part not of me at all. Also yeah, no, thinks it's been a really fantastic Black History Month so far.
Yeah, oof. But I think Liam Neeson also might have been. I'm not trying to diminish what he said. I feel like he might have been exaggerating what he said.
Yeah,
a little
you
bit
think
to sound
do you think
hardcore.
It was maybe like yeah, he was trying to sound tough because his action movie's coming out, and then he just said something fucked up.
He pauses for 8 years before he says, like, the very racially charged thing he says.
Right.
And I want to jump into that interview and just scream at him, like, you clearly thought about this for several seconds. Why did you land on saying that? Like, what was going on in your head, dude?
Oh, my.
Anyway,
the world's a mess. You don't come here for that.
You know, I would prefer a world that was simple and clean.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was trying to figure out where you're going with that. I wanted to take it in a direction, and then I didn't know where to go. So I just said, oh, yeah?
That's the theme song for the thing we're about to talk about.
Oh, my God. I hate you so much.
I mean,
anyway,
you should know that. It plays in front of half of the games.
Yeah. I mean, those songs are beautiful, Bobby, but I don't know if lyrically they're super important to remember.
So what are we talking about today?
All
right, so we are talking about a game series that started in, I think, 2003? 2002, actually.
Yeah.
Called Kingdom Hearts. Because the latest entry, and the entry that promises to be, like, the final entry of the series
is, that is definitely what they are saying, right? Full disclosure, I had a heartbreaking experience this week. I was probably 70% through with the game, and my PlayStation broke, so I have not yet beat Kingdom Hearts 3, which you also haven't, but that's because you have a healthier life than me and play less video games. So.
I think one of those two things is true.
Bobby, what time did you go to bed last night?
10 o'clock, like every night.
So were you, let's talk about our entry into Kingdom Hearts maybe a little bit. Like,
okay.
What was your first reaction when this came out? Because I was a big, this came out at a weird time in my life. Because we were just actually talking about this. Like, I was a big Final Fantasy guy. I was a big Disney guy. But when this first game came out, I was at a stage of adolescence where I was maybe a little resistant to admitting I would be into something like this. I was worried that it was like a little kiddie. And then my brother got very into it. And I got obsessed. I played that first one like crazy. And it was at a point in my life where I didn't really fully understand how JRPGs worked. So I would always kind of end up in not the best standing when I would get to the final boss and really struggle at the end. I don't think I actually beat Ansem until like 10 years after that game came out.
So, yes.
Sorry if I'm jumping ahead.
I'm trying to think of what I want to say. Well, let's talk about really quickly what in 2002 what Kingdom Hearts was pitched as, like what it was. Because in my eyes, I remember the very first thing I saw of Kingdom Hearts was a shot in Game Informer or Electronic Gaming Monthly, and it was Sora talking to Tidus, who is the fighting Tidus, who's the protagonist of.
Is it Tidus?
They say Tidus in Kingdom Hearts, so that's what I'm going off of.
Okay.
They never say his name in Final Fantasy X.
Right.
So it showed the two of them fighting, and then there was like another clip of that same character Sora with Donald and Goofy, and I lost my mind, and I didn't have a PlayStation 2 at the time, and I believe I got my PlayStation 2 so I could play Kingdom Hearts when it came out. And ostensibly, the basic premise of Kingdom Hearts is it's a mashup of Final Fantasy and Disney. You know, like you're touring you know, characters and worlds well, and for both those properties.
Aesthetically and narratively, that's true, but it also is, like, it plays unlike any Final Fantasy game I had ever played. It's not turn-based, and I had never played a JRPG that was not turn-based in this way, and that was very exciting to me. The 3D, that felt to me like the jump from Super Mario World to Mario 64 in terms of that genre. I mean, I don't think that's super entirely true, but at the time I was like, oh, this is a game with potions and special moves and summons and all this stuff, but it's all happening in real time, and that was really exciting to me.
It is kind of an interesting cross-section of, you know, JRPGs and also you know, and like action games, because it on one hand it's kind of like a, you know, like your typical beat-em-up brawler, the way it kind of unfolds, but then you're also scrolling through menus to launch special, you know, magic attacks and stuff.
Yeah, and you can, and there's so much customization, and
you assemble.
And when I was a kid, I would always kind of, I played them like beat 'em up games, and I've returning to them recently. You know, we're going to talk about today. We both kind of played a lot of the older ones again. I've played with a lot more magic. When I was a kid, I would just kind of keep hitting the X button and try to boost up my health as much as possible and just power through that way. But there's a lot of complexity to that game. It can be a beat 'em up, but there's a lot going on in all of those games. And they seem to get, well, I'm jumping ahead. We're still trying to talk about the first one. Sorry.
So you enjoyed the first one.
I loved the first one. I remember strongest memories about the first one is there is a very specific scene right before you fight the jaguar in the Tarzan world that I kept dying on. And in the original Kingdom Hearts, you could not skip through cutscenes. That was a real big thing on PlayStation 2, is you always had to watch the cutscenes. And there was like a 10-minute long cutscene before you fought this fucking jaguar, and I had to watch it probably 20 times.
You know, I had that same experience, but it was fighting Clayton in the Tarzan world.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe it was
Clayton, it Tarzan saying, not Clayton, not Clayton, over
and
over
again? Yeah, well, that definitely also happened.
Playing that again recently. Triggered a weird thing in my brain.
There's also I started to play the first one a little bit, not as much as you, and it is funny how the first one isn't perfect, so like I kept falling into the exact same, you know, like not knowing what to do next problems that I was falling into 15 years ago. So I was having not only frustration but this like very strange deja vu about my frustration. I think the first one overall is really fucking strong. It's cute as hell. It's a really clever premise. One thing that I think we're going to differ on a lot today, or I'm assuming at least, I dig the story of Kingdom Hearts. I think Kingdom Hearts is comparable to something like Metal Gear Solid, which is to say that it has like a very, very specific singular vision of one person, and that vision is sometimes batshit crazy, but it's such a auteur's vision of what he wants that I kind of love it anyway. And like Metal Gear Solid, you know, Kojima started making these games for, you know, PlayStation Portable and stuff, and all of a sudden they like matter to the series. And I think that what is this guy's name that created Kingdom Hearts? Do you know that off the top of your head?
Yeah, I do. It is.
I looked it up last night and I can't remember it.
God damn it.
But I think I like that. I like that it all clearly comes from one person. Nomura. And I think there's a lot of frustration about the fact that all these games are on all these different consoles and you kind of have to play them all to know exactly what's going on. But honestly, at this point, I mean, you can play almost every single Kingdom Hearts game on your PlayStation 4. It's not hard to get them. They're all HD remastered and they're relatively cheap. I think you got pretty much every Kingdom Hearts game that exists in some form for about $100, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I could not disagree more with that. But I want to say one more thing about Kingdom Hearts 1, which is...
Yeah, so what did you think when it first came out? I'm talking a lot about what I thought about it.
It was a much different game. I loved Kingdom Hearts. Like, I unabashedly still love Kingdom Hearts. I have a weird... I don't want to say a love-hate relationship with the series, because I love it, but there are things now, even with the new one when we get there, that stick out to me or things that haven't aged or refuse to age. That
I mean,
really
the new one feels
me.
A lot like the first one in a lot of ways. It doesn't. I mean, combat-wise, it's super, super sophisticated and advanced, and it's graphically gorgeous. But, it feels a cutscene fight, cutscene fight, cutscene fight kind of game.
We've talked about it a little bit, and I think in a post-BioShock world, it's fucking insane to, like, if you want to make a movie, make a movie. But I'm willing to actually allow that for Kingdom Hearts because I guess the comparison you made with Metal Gear is interesting because I would be willing to make that allowance with Metal Gear too. But yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself. I want to say about Kingdom Hearts, though, is playing it again, it's really interesting. You see the technical limitations of that game. Like, everything is split up into rooms, and you're exploring these rooms, because everything is gorgeous, but you can't load it all.
It's not huge, yeah. And it's, yeah, exactly.
But I was caught off guard by the by the beginnings of this overarching Kingdom Hearts story that, would eventually, I think, very quickly grow into this big, messy octopus that
is impenetrable. I can explain the Kingdom Hearts story to you in like 5 minutes.
I think I could now too, but it's also anyway.
I think that Kingdom Hearts in some ways to me has the same problem as something like Dragon Ball Z, which is that you're making something for 10-year-olds that ask them to be extremely aware of every single detail of every single plot point, and you're not making it super easy for 10-year-olds to access everything in there. And so, like, I would watch Dragon Ball Z as a kid. I'm like, oh, I missed the last 20 episodes. I guess this guy is something. But, like, that's what you do constantly feel like in Kingdom Hearts.
Well, okay, let's move on to...
I'm sorry. I'm bullying the conversation. I'm going to shut up for a minute and let you say what you want about the first one.
No. That's all I have to say about the first one. But it's like, I want to talk about Chain of Memories now, because this is where I start to, like... This is where I start to have problems with the Kingdom Hearts story.
Which, by the way, I was up playing Chain of Memories until 3 a.m. last night. I love Chain of Memories.
I played a little bit of Chain of Memories, and it's fun. It's like the battle system, which I remember not enjoying as a high school kid, is fun to me now.
It also opens up a lot more as you go on. It starts off a little slow. My biggest thing that I've been doing this time replaying it is, especially after just having played so much other Kingdom Hearts, honestly, I'm kind of just skipping through the cutscenes of the in-world stuff, each of the Disney worlds, because that is just a rehash of the original Kingdom Hearts. Talk about Chain of Memories.
My experience with Chain of Memories was...
Which is the first game that came out after the original Kingdom Hearts. This is the first sequel to Kingdom Hearts. On PlayStation, however.
How it was marketed was Kingdom Hearts for Game Boy Advance. And I was like, holy shit, this is everything I wanted. And the first screenshot I saw was Cloud Strife, who was the PlayStation-only hero from Final Fantasy VII, was on Advance.
He's the Elvis of Final Fantasy, yeah.
Yeah, and I was losing my mind. And what I got... was and I expected it to be, you know, it was kind of introduced as the plot of Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories is that Sora is going through this castle where he has to basically relive Kingdom Hearts 1, which is fine for a Game Boy Advance version of Kingdom Hearts. I'm like, that's
right.
Fine.
It's like a retelling, so you get it instead if you don't have a PlayStation.
Because presumably, the kids who'd be playing this on Game Boy Advance are different from the kids who'd be playing it on PlayStation 2.
Right, right. By the way, I agree with everything you're saying so far, and I love this game anyway. But go ahead.
No, and it's
you're right. This as a business decision, what they do with this game makes no sense.
And it starts off immediately where Kingdom Hearts 1 leaves off, and it introduces a whole new set of characters who I assumed were going to be completely disposable because literally at the end of this, one of the characters wipes Sora's memory and says, you're not going to remember this castle at all. And I thought, well, that's cute.
And these are three characters we've never seen before.
Right.
Although in the defense of the series has let us know that characters in these black covered hoods are important because there's a bunch of secret stuff in the original game that says that they're the secret organization behind things. So I think his idea was like,
secret video at the very end. Yeah, if you do something I know, specific to unlock.
Yeah,
it.
But that's what I'm saying. Like when you have somebody, but that's also what Kojima does. He based the story for Metal Gear Solid 5 off of a plot from the second Super Nintendo game. Like I don't think there's a difference. I think they're both nuts.
The difference between Kojima and Nomura do is Kojima, yes, he gets really into his world, his vast world building, and he gets really into, you know, these insane ideas he has. But I still think Kojima is able to tell, within his own language, within his own rules, he's able to tell a coherent story in one game. And Nomura doesn't do that. Nomura's
you're right.
You know, here's this giant world, and then here's, like, I'm going to take an eyedropper and just take an out-of-context, like, drop from this story and then, like, splash it on. And you better have not only played every other game, but have, like, studied every other game.
So what Bobby's, I think, we're kind of dancing around is Chain of Memories, which is the second game, and it's a Game Boy Advance game. It was sold as kind of like a Game Boy port of Kingdom Hearts almost, because it's just a retelling of that. But it's not. As the game goes on, you find out that as you're going through this mansion, Sora isn't regaining his memories. He's gaining new fake memories from this new fake character, and he's being brainwashed, and it's this new other separate story. And then the game ends, and then Kingdom Hearts 2 starts right after that, expecting you to know all of these characters and what has happened to... So, like, it is asking you to play a game that is a rehash of another game right away and know it really well, which is a big ask.
Every Kingdom Hearts game starts with a kind of an abstract movie that summarizes the plot of the previous other game.
Yeah, yeah.
And
set to really crazy, like, house pop music. Right. It's great. They're beautiful. I love those.
And the second one starts... I remember being so... I was in college at this point by the time Kingdom Hearts 2 came out. I was so excited. I plugged the game in. And then that video started summarizing the plot of Chain of Memories. And I remember thinking, what? I was shocked.
Yeah.
And I told one of my friends had was saying like, oh, I want to beat Chain of Memories before I start Kingdom Hearts 2. And I'm like, you probably don't have to.
Well, man. Also, you have this main character, Sora, and his best friends are Donald Goofy, and he's this cute little, like, Final Fantasy-esque kid. He's got the spiky hair and a stupid sword and crazy clothes with straps and buckles all over him, and you fall in love with him over the course of the first game. It's Haley Joel Osment does the voice. It's great. And then you start the second game, and you're ready for some Kingdom Hearts. You're ready for some Disney action, and you meet this new guy named Roxas, and you spend 3 hours, four, maybe even 5 hours with him in a small suburban town, running errands. And there's no Disney, and there's no Rock, and there's no Sora, and you don't know what the fuck is going on.
I would even argue if Kingdom Hearts 2 had started you on Roxas.
By the way, I love Kingdom Hearts 2, but it's the beginning is bad. It's a weird fucking choice for the beginning of a sequel to a game like that.
Yeah, it's maybe one of the most ill-conceived first acts of a game ever.
Yeah.
And I think even... Because I don't even think... I like Sora a lot. I think Sora, for a while, is kind of an ill-defined character. He's just kind of there.
I mean, yeah. But you're just like... When you're running around as Sora, you feel like you're playing Kingdom Hearts.
Sure,
sure. But when you buy a Kingdom Hearts game, you don't want to run around as this other fucking guy you've never seen before who doesn't fight.
But I'm saying that doesn't even matter if they just immediately threw you into like Halloween Town. You know, if you're like Roxas playing through.
By the way, Kingdom Hearts 3 literally throws you directly into, like, I think they made a little like 2.9 and just threw it at the beginning of Kingdom Hearts 3 because it feels like it's almost a separate game than from the rest of it.
Right. And so Kingdom Hearts 2 is I haven't actually touched this one since I beat it the first time, but I remember gameplay-wise it being at least as good, but better.
It's better than the first one. The games
the gameplay, at least, yeah.
The games all substantially improve the gameplay in really fascinating, great ways. I also don't think there is a Kingdom Hearts game I've played that isn't fun to play. I've never had the experience you had the first time playing Chain of Memories. I love Chain of Memories. I love Birth by Sleep. I love 2. I love 3. I think that it's a really strong series in terms of gameplay.
I agree. It's funny. I have this, you know, the collections that collect all the games, and some of the games are reduced to just cutscene movies of games.
Yeah. So what we should explain that. So there's been what, 9 games?
Yeah.
But a lot of them, but there's only been 3 on major consoles. And so the rest of them, they kind of HD remaster and make into new games or make into movies and throw them on these box sets called 1.5 and 2.5.
And it's funny because also I should say at this point, by the time Kingdom Hearts 2 is over, in my opinion, the story, aside from just being like way too overarching for its own good, has gotten to the point where it's really, I want to say pretentious. Like, it's really, there's in vague. There's a lot of like talk about light and darkness and like hearts and stuff, but like none of those.
It's all just about friendship and trusting each other and hearts. That's all it's about.
But like all of those ideas are not defined. Like they're all very vague.
There are times, and I don't want to say this is like a. I mean, no, I think I would say it's fair to say this is like something that happens in anime and especially like Japanese video game culture where style over substance is preferred. And I don't always have a problem with that. And I think that is what Kingdom Hearts is a little bit. And that's kind of fine with me.
It gets so wrapped up in its own storytelling. It's not just like if it was just style, because it pulls off style and polish so
that's
well.
What I mean, that stuff doesn't bother me. It feels like fascinating in the same way that something like The Room feels fascinating. You keep kind of bringing up Tommy Wiseau in this, and I think you're doing it in a way to like roll your eyes at the series, and I agree with you, but it doesn't make me roll my eyes at the series. It makes me say like, oh, this is a guy who like thinks a lot about friendship. And like, I don't totally get exactly what he's trying to say about it, but I have a feeling I do, and like, and it looks really cool. And I'm fine with the style,
you know, it's
of
interesting
the substance.
Though, by the time Kingdom Hearts 3 starts, and we should say there's a between this the main console series mainstays, there's like a 14-year jump between Kingdom Hearts 2 and 3, but there are like 20 games that come out in between.
Right.
That keep the story moving. But by the time Kingdom Hearts 3 rolls along, there is a friendship I find myself caring about, weirdly. But it's not the friendship at the core of the series, which is Sora and his two besties, Riku and Kairi. I could not give a shit about their relationships with each other because we don't see it ever, you know?
Right. Like, I agree. Yeah. And that's fair. I mean, they just,
I would die for Sora, Donald, and Goofy's friendship. It's so
fun
to watch by the time you get to Kingdom Hearts 3, but it still feels like Donald and Goofy are these like tertiary buddies who just kind of like tag along with Sora.
And when you look at the series as a whole, and you like you watch that 30-minute video, and you are kind of making fun of this, and it should be made fun of. It's silly, but like there is a cyclical repetition of patterns of storytelling to this that I find fun in the same way that I like that about Zelda. Like it feels more like an impressionist painting of a story than like. I don't need it to be super solid. Like the fact that there's these like we keep getting these sets of 3 characters that kind of fulfill these 3 different archetypes who are all like just trying to walk the line of like the, you know, the light and dark side of the force essentially with these keyblades. I like that. I think it's cool. I don't mind it at all. And the fact that they keep like informing each other and overlapping with each other. You have Terra, Aquas, and Ventus. You have Donald, Sora, and Goofy, you have Sora, Riku, and Kairi. Then, like, it's fun. I like, and then you have Axel, Roxas, and Shion.
Yeah,
like it's and they all kind of are doing the same thing over and over with the same pattern of like the hardness of having relationships with other people who are different than you. Like I know I'm saying nothing because he's saying nothing, but I still like it. It's still thematically interesting and fun to me.
I don't think that is at the center of any of these games. I understand that it tells you it is, but I don't think any of these relationships, except for maybe Roxas, Axel, and Shion in 358 over 2 days, because that's the kind of naming convention this series has. I think none of those relationships are really at the core of the stories they're telling.
I guess, but you're right.
But
I
we're
guess
told
they spend,
that they're very yeah. important, you know?
Right. I mean, do you really want to watch, like, Kairi and Sora, like, have lunch together and bond? Is that why you want
to
come
to I would
to
like to
series?
See Sora like, and Kairi what, go on adventures together, sure.
I would say that there's this, I'm 80% or 70% through the last game, and there was a big deal made about the fact that Kairi is a Keyblade wielder now, and we have not seen her once in the game. So
Kairi's
so
role is to show up at the beginning of the game and at the end of the game. Like, that is what she does.
And Riku's role is to misunderstand things and attack senselessly.
You know, it's kind of adorable, because Riku's, okay, so Riku, Sora's kind of this,
Sora's Mega Man and Riku is Proto Man. He's like, he's better, but he's also like kind of
so
an
angry. He's your prototypical like angry Square Enix character.
Right. I mean, I've said this before, like there are three, like when you have a love triangle like this, it's the same thing on Lost, it's the same thing in everything. It's always Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. and Wonder Woman sometimes is treated like Wonder Woman, and sometimes she's treated like fucking Princess Peach. In this game, Kairi's treated a little more like Princess Peach, but that's, I mean, that's what those, like, we keep seeing that trio over and over and over. But one angry person, one, like, sweet person, and one, like, brave person, you know?
You know what, that's, okay, like, let's put that down, because I want to go back to that. But
okay,
I was gonna say
in
it's
a good
kind
way,
of adorable.
Or are you gonna make fun of me for that?
No, I agree with that, and I think that's anyway.
Yeah, go ahead.
We're going in a lot of different directions. But
yeah, sorry.
I was gonna say I really like that Riku now, who's kind of like the eternally moody dude, is kind of has been stuck for a while in the series as Mickey Mouse's buddy.
It's great.
Fun.
The fact
that's
that they
fun
threw
dynamic.
Like basically Angel from Buffy with Mickey Mouse and like also like Mickey Mouse is hilarious in these games because they don't care that Mickey Mouse is inherently like a very cute character and because he's just Mickey Mouse capital M he's got to be the leader, and so they do a lot of work to make Mickey Mouse like mysterious and badass in these games. But also, it's just still Mickey Mouse with a sword in his hand, talking like Mickey Mouse, and it never stops being funny to me. Like, when he starts, you know, every once in a while in 2, I remember if you die, Mickey will show up and, like, help wipe up the rest of the battle for you. And that was, like, he was, like, a Deus Ex Machina. And the fact that Mickey Mouse is, like, I don't know what the comparable thing would be, but he's the cavalry in this game is very, very funny to me, kind of always.
And he shows up at the end of Kingdom Hearts 1.
Right, he's kind of just like a...
Incredible.
Like a, he's the MacGuffin in the first one more than a character.
But he gets a big hero moment at the end of the one, and I remember goosebumps, because I'm like,
yeah,
it's
me
Mickey
too.
Mouse being a badass.
Yeah.
But the more he gets integrated into the series and is just this character who's trying to find out mysteries with everyone
else. Yeah, and now he just talks like Sora and Riku. Like,
but
he
it's
just
kind of fun. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's weird to watch.
Now he's Mickey Mouse that talks like a Final Fantasy character.
Right,
but
I kind of
like,
love it.
Still with a Mickey Mouse voice. It's so funny. I think my core thing with this is like, it's fucking really, really weird that this is a cultural artifact that exists,
mm-hmm.
and I'm so happy it does. Like, mm-hmm. at its core, I don't want this to be anything else, because the fact that it exists at all, and it gets to be as weird as it wants, like, I cannot believe that Disney allows this, honestly.
I was reading a thing yesterday about how cooperative Disney is with Square Enix.
And they get so many of the voice actors to come in, it's like this big thing, and it's...
But
it's
every
just so strange.
Every action that happens, Disney has to sign off on. And Disney and Pixar, I guess, did say a few times with Kingdom Hearts 3, like, no, that's too violent. They wouldn't do
right,
that.
Right, right.
Or they Pixar apparently was really obsessed with the specificity of Remy the Rat's tail and how it moved and stuff like that. Kingdom Hearts 3 was the first time, I guess, that they ever shared assets with Square Enix.
Wow.
But still they
Pixar
had to...
did it, or
no, Disney. Well, I
Disney
think they both
did.
But like they were talking about how so they got like the model for Elsa, but then mm-hmm. on top of that, I mean it was basically just a reference point. Like they had to put so many coats of paint over it to make it usable.
Right, right, right. Of course.
But
I mean that being said, you know, there are moments in Kingdom Hearts 3 where, you know, for better and for worse, like, it looks like you're watching mm-hmm. those movies. It's really crazy, especially those more recent computer animated movies. I mean, Elsa and Anna look amazing.
They
Toy
do.
Story looks amazing. Honestly, I thought Monsters Inc. looked really good too. How many level? So how far are you in 3?
I just left Arendelle, and I'm on my way to Monstropolis.
Okay, so you're pretty early on still. So you've done Toy Story, you've done Tangled, you've done Arendelle, and that's it. Frozen,
yeah, I believe,
and Hercules, yeah.
Oh yeah, and Hercules. James Woods is still cool to be employed by Disney, but James Gunn.
Yeah,
just want to remind everyone that.
That's. I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. Yeah,
also, Ike Perlmutter runs the VA, but anyway. what was I going to say? So Birth by Sleep, which is a game that exists in between Kingdom Hearts 2 and 3,
yes.
introduces another trio of characters called Aqua, Ventus, and Terra.
And what I like about this, and this is what I mean by the Zelda comparison, is this is supposed to be like centuries earlier. These three characters are going through a very similar experience to what we've seen already, and it's got this kind of time as a flat circle vibe to it that I enjoyed.
You can call it time as a flat circle. Other people could call it lazy writing, but
it feels prequely in a fun way. I just like it.
Prequely. I could call it a crucial chapter that I didn't know existed.
Birth by Sleep?
No, I was going to say though was. Yeah. You were talking about how each trio has these archetypes.
Yes.
You know, like the angry one, the brave one, the
pure one, or the sweet. I mean, that's always the girl. She's, you know.
What I really dig about Birth by Sleep is, again, I don't think these friendships in Birth by Sleep mean shit, but Aqua gets to be
Aqua's
the brave
cool.
one.
Yeah, totally.
Which is cool. She's the female in the group, and
actually, I guess you're right. I guess Ventus is kind of taking on the Kairi role in that trio.
Yeah, and that's neat. And I like Aqua. You know, I was playing one of the other spinoff games that stars Aqua, and I'm like, oh, Aqua's cool. I wish we had more games with Aqua. I just wish that, you know, when Kingdom Hearts 3 started, we weren't immediately talking about Aqua as if we were supposed to know who Aqua was, because, you know, it is called Kingdom Hearts 3. It is the sequel to Kingdom Hearts 2.
Well, it's not. It's a sequel to all
Kingdom Hearts
everything.
Dream Drop.
That's what I feel. Here's the other thing, too. I think it's healthier to think of Kingdom Hearts as the Marvel movies and to think of the
Marvel
actual
movies?
1, 2... Wait. Okay. And to think of 1, 2, and 3 as the Avengers movies in that franchise. Meaning... You do kind of want to watch the rest of the stuff if you want to have more fun. Like I know that's a business strategy that you have strong feelings about differently than me anyway, but
Okay, so I think we could go one way with that comparison, and then you and I hash out our
angry differences about the Marvel Universe.
About Infinity War, specifically.
Right.
But I would even say Infinity War, which I think would be the Kingdom Hearts of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
Infinity War bothers to give every character an introduction. And Kingdom Hearts does not give a shit about reorienting you to the
they
world.
They have that song at the beginning.
They do have that song at the beginning. And they have three characters who look exactly alike. Because two of them are like spiritual mirrors of each other. And then
I mean, I think all three of them are. You're talking about Ventus, Roxas, and Sora. They're all the same. I mean, but here's the thing. In that third game... They're all trapped inside of him because it's on fucking purpose. They're echoes of each other.
I'm not saying that the logic of the story doesn't make sense. I'm just making the argument that it isn't very good. that's all I'm trying to say.
And
I'm not saying that the experience of playing
I would
Kingdom
watch
Hearts isn't
any,
good.
But that's what I mean. Like, I'm having so much fun watching this just crazy guy get to be crazy in his sandbox with all these tools. Like, it's just fun for me. It's such a unique experience, and the gameplay is so fun that like. I'm playing the most fun Disney themed version of the room. Like it's weird and interesting and cool and strange and
where it's really fun for me is where the crazy Final Fantasy-ish Square Enix Kingdom Hearts shit crashes into Disney. When you see Elsa or Woody kind of dealing with the Kingdom Hearts story, that's fun. When they get carted off to a new area and, like, they're in front of a mansion in Twilight Town talking about, like, light and dark, that's where I literally doze off because
And the downside of what I just said, too, is that, like, with Chain of Memories, the biggest problem is you're really playing two different stories. In between each world, each Disney world you go to, you're seeing the story of Castle Oblivion, and then those Disney worlds are not really actually connected to anything else.
But it's the best part. It's so much fun, though.
Right. But, like, you don't have to care about both, but you do, like, later you have to care about, I don't know, it's interesting.
I'm nervous because I read ahead a little bit. I'm not going to spoil anything, but it doesn't seem like this is the last we're going to see of these characters in video games, obviously. Okay. I think it will be the last game of the Kingdom Hearts series proper, but it sounds like there is going to be a sequel to Kingdom Hearts 3, but it sounds like what they're teasing in, like, the secret video, you know, at the end of Kingdom Hearts 3, is, like, Square Enix RPG worlds, which is cool. But I want Disney in it, too.
Well, that's,
like, Disney's
that's
kind of
the,
a crucial part of the formula.
I mean, I think the downside of this series asking you to play all these games is, in America at least, like, I mean, I imagine everywhere, like, a huge selling point is Disney. On the box, right?
Yeah, oh yeah,
and,
definitely.
And when you play Birth by Sleep or Dream Drop Distance, forgive me if I'm wrong, is there any Disney stuff in those games?
Yeah, there's, like, half a dozen Disney worlds in both those games.
There is? Okay, yeah. Okay, never mind. Then I apologize. I was thinking that those, because they do, there are some of these games that get so caught up in the logic of, like, spiky-haired people talking about hearts that you don't get to see, you know, Tigger or I don't know, whatever, running around, and that is, I mean, you can't lose that. That's part of what,
because I was even playing, there's a like basically glorified tech demo for Kingdom Hearts 3 called Fragmentary Passage or something that I was playing last night.
So yesterday Bobby was like, oh, I'm playing some old stuff, and I was feeling very confident. I played everything, and then you immediately named Dream Drop Distance, Fragmentary whatever, and something else within one text, and I was like, oh, I know nothing, Jon Snow. I didn't have any idea what you were talking about.
There's this...
Oh, and then you started talking about World Ends With You, which is a different game that doesn't, but apparently that character shows up in Kingdom Hearts at one point. I was so confused.
Okay, so there is a Square Enix RPG called The World Ends With You, and he shows up in Traverse Town at the beginning of
I see.
Dream Drop Distance, in much the same way that, like, Squall or Aerith
Cloud
show
up. Okay, got it.
But, there's this game called, I don't think it's very long, I haven't finished it, but it's called, the naming conventions in Kingdom Hearts 2 are so wacky, or in Kingdom Hearts are so wacky, it's called 0.2 Birth by Sleep, A Fragmentary Passage, and it follows...
So that's a sequel to Birth by Sleep, it's not...
Yeah, it follows Aqua in the aftermath of Birth by Sleep, and it doesn't need to have anything Disney in it, per se... Uh-huh. But immediately, because she's wandering through this dark world, but in the distance is Cinderella's castle, and she's working her way towards Cinderella's castle. And I feel like that is Square Enix and Nomura acknowledging the draw of Disney in these games.
Sure.
They're like, these are nothing without the Disney property also being there. I don't know if Cinderella's actually going to be in it, but it's like, here is a Disney thing for you to latch on to.
Yeah, totally.
If I can say something controversial that I'm sure you'll disagree with me. So Birth by Sleep and Dream Drop Distance, which are two of the handheld games. One of them
have too many women in them? Is that what you're going to say?
Too many women. Far too many women. No, one of them is on PSP. One of them was on 3DS. And I actually played both of them.
Yeah, let's talk. How many different systems has this franchise been on? Could we say that really quick?
Because PlayStation 2. Game Boy Advance.
Yeah.
Nintendo DS.
Yeah.
Nintendo
PlayStation Portable, correct?
PlayStation Portable and Nintendo 3DS. Do we count PlayStation 3?
Yeah, and this is a series that has asked you to play every single one of those games, And it was not until about 2 years ago that they started re-releasing them in a format where you could play them all on one console. So I just wanted to... more than 2 years. I've had my 1.5 for a long time. But it's an interesting... There's some Swiss cheese in this...
Right.
Or some, right. This is holy. I get what you're saying. Like,
No, but...
I'm
going to say a good thing about these two games. Because I think they're both... I haven't beaten either of them. But they're both incredibly fun. I think Birth by Sleep especially sort of scrapes the bottom of the barrel as far as the Disney stuff you do. Like, Cinderella isn't necessarily ripe for fun video game stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But they do interesting things with the gameplay itself, where you have a command deck where you can stack up special moves. I think, I believe they both remove MP, which is magic points, from the game, and they just make all the magical abilities rechargeable, which I kind of liked. I find the streamlined gameplay from both of those really fun and intuitive. Dream Drop Distance adds this interesting thing that I don't know how I feel about it. You play as both Sora and Riku in that game. And,
well, that's they do that in Chain of Memories. There's two different stories.
Right. So, how that works though. Is while one of them is dreaming, the other one is playing in that person's dream.
Wait, so Sora is in Dream Drop Distance? I thought it was
No, he's one of the main characters. But so when one of them, the gimmick is one of them starts dreaming and the other one starts playing, or one of them, other one is like, you know.
I get it, yeah.
But so there's like a countdown, and when the countdown runs out, you automatically switch to the other person. So you're just kind of flying between these two characters for the whole game without a ton of structure. But it's interesting.
Right. Okay.
Kingdom Hearts 3 does interesting things to evolve the gameplay from Kingdom Hearts 2. But I miss the kind of evolutions that happened in Birth by Sleep and Dream Drop Distance, where Kingdom Hearts 3 takes those and kind of throws them out. And introduces some new things, but I also think for a game coming out in 2018, the gameplay hasn't really evolved as much as it should have.
I like it more than you. I will say I like this feels like the best version to me of a Square Enix 3D real-time JRPG, meaning there are regular basic attacks you could do. There is absolutely like tactical movement on the ground and dodging and blocking and all that stuff, but also you just have these beautiful summons that all function very differently, and you do control them, so there's like constant variety in this game. You can use three different keyblades at once. They all have form changes. They have like all these different super moves you can do with the rest of your team. Then they also bring in the rides feel a little repetitive to me, I will say. Like, the fact there's only three or four of them, it feels like the summon equivalent of like when you play, like, you know, like that new Ghostbusters game where the characters only say the same four things over and over, but it's like their voices, so you're like, well, I guess they just didn't want to record a lot. Like, that's what the rides feel like. I wish there was a little more diversity to them, but overall, like, I am really blown away by the combat in this new game. I enjoy it quite a lot.
I like it too. I just don't think I think it's a lot of flashing lights, and I don't think it is necessarily more interesting or intuitive. I think it's fun to look at, and they're just little things that
that's fair.
Where I'm gonna sound like an old angry man, like, you'll be walking on, this happened a lot in Olympus and Arendelle, it's like you'll be walking along a cliff and then these flying enemies will show up and you'll go to attack them, and Sora looks really cool flying through the air, like dispatching them, then they don't really have the mechanics in place for Sora to fly back onto the cliff. And so a lot of times you end up shooting yourself off of a mountain and having to climb all the way back up. And it doesn't punish you as far as, like, Sora doesn't die, but then, you know, you do have to waste, like, another minute climbing your way back up the cliff.
I will say that the flow motion aspect of things is not my favorite. It could have been cool if it was tighter, but the bouncing off of things around and stuff is very, very hard to do. Mm-hmm. And it looks cool, so it's kind of frustrating that it's hard to do.
Which is what I'm saying, I guess, when you go back to, and I'm now the one arguing on behalf of the tertiary games. I thought flow motion was really fun in
I agree.
In those other games, like the handheld games. And right. I don't know why Kingdom Hearts 3 is having such a hard time with slow motion. That being said, Kingdom Hearts 3 is like the greatest game ever made. It is so much fun to play.
Right.
In spite of all the problems I have with it.
I'm arguing a lot of defenses for this series, and you're arguing a lot about your problems with it. We should say we're both fans. This wasn't like I was saying, like, we need to do this, and Bobby's like, fine, I hate this game, but fine. Like, you're also a huge fan, right?
Yeah, definitely. To encapsulate my entire experience with Kingdom Hearts, I spend a lot of my time playing Kingdom Hearts sort of like live tweeting or live texting Ian my reactions to
it.
And there's
which has
a moment
been very, very funny to me because there's a lot of things to make fun of in this series.
In Arendelle, which is the Frozen Land, you spend a lot of the time chasing down Elsa, getting into repetitive fights, getting kicked off of Elsa's mountain, climbing back up Elsa's mountain.
Twice. You have to climb all the way up the mountain twice. Yeah.
And I was just really, I was sort of not having it with the repetition, and I was texting Ian like an angry old man. And then a scene from Frozen is very faithfully recreated. And
I mean, I think it's okay to say what it is, or do we not want to?
Okay, sure. No, Elsa sings Let It Go, and Sora, Donald, and Goofy are sort of dropped into the number in a very kind of, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead
right.
sort of
and
way.
It's like a shot-by-shot recreation using the Kingdom Hearts engine of that scene. Just
and
with
it's
Sora,
so
Donald, Goofy kind of
much
in the background.
Fun.
Yeah.
It is so much fun.
It's great.
Then afterwards you get thrown into, like, a boss fight with her snowman, which is a lot of fun.
And then he becomes one of your companions for a little bit, which I got very excited about. I will say one thing that you said, and I agree with you, those like world specific companions, you know, like fighting with, you know, the Tangled characters on your side or whatever. I would have liked there to be a little bit more interaction with them because it doesn't totally always feel like they're there. Like there's the cool excitement of like, oh, I'm fighting with Flynn Rider. And then like, you just kind of forget he's there because everything you're doing is so pretty.
Right.
I think it's
okay. Like, I don't know with the current battle system they have if there's an easy fix.
A better answer to that, yeah.
Right. But what I had been saying to Ian was, like, I wish one of these spinoff games had just been, like a weird kind of, like a traditional RPG where you get to take control of all of these characters. Because it would be really fun to be able to command Buzz Lightyear or Rapunzel or someone, you know, just because they are doing really interesting things if you're watching them, you know, like I turn around and Flynn Rider's spinning around on a barrel and you're like, wait a minute, what is going on there?
Yeah. They do great. Their moves are great. You just don't have a lot of opportunity to watch those animations or.
Right.
You know, yeah.
So Kingdom Hearts is good.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, I just spent an hour complaining about it.
There are indefensible aspects about it, but I don't care. It's great, and I love it.
For everything that completely frustrates me about this game series, it will do something that, you know, no other game has done, and it'll make me so, so happy. And
if you play these games, you will experience a lot of joy. You will also, like, probably want... Oh, by the way, also now, like, every Kingdom Hearts game available now in either 1.5, 2.5, or 2.8, you can skip every cutscene you want, which is a very, very, very big thing.
It's a huge
thing.
That
is not a small thing.
You know what is funny? I was starting to say this earlier. So I was playing Recoded yesterday, which is...
Which is not good, right? That's
No, but... It was
kind of one of the stinkers in the franchise. There are not a lot of big whiffs. I would say that's probably one of them, correct?
I don't know, but I think it came out on mobile originally, but then it came out on DS later.
Yeah.
And so I was playing it, and I got 10 minutes into it before realizing that it was one of the one of those movie compilations. It wasn't even a real game, which says something about Kingdom Hearts, that I was just sitting there for 10 minutes waiting to take control of. Sora, and then I'm like, oh, I don't think I'm ever going to take control of Sora.
Yeah, I think the movie compilation is the series saying, like, you don't really have to play this, but, like, it's here if you want it. Like, they don't put a lot of effort into 358/2 or into Recoded, I think.
No, and Recoded does feel, I mean, there are references to Recoded in Kingdom Hearts 3, but like,
Bobby,
358 over 2
a heart can
introduces an important
live.
character, you know?
Right,
Xion
right.
is introduced in 358 over 2, right? She's not
Yes,
in Kingdom
yes.
Hearts 2, yeah.
No. You know, Bobby, a heart can live anywhere, even inside of data.
Even inside data. Oh
Um,
boy.
people should play Kingdom Hearts. They're really fun games. I mean, if you want to, elicit joy in your life, to quote fucking what's her name from Netflix that everybody's obsessed with, buy some Kingdom Hearts games.
Yeah. We're talking about Claire Underwood, right?
Yes. Oh, what's her name? Marie Kondo? Is
Yeah,
that her
I know.
name? I all of a sudden panicked and I didn't want to get her name wrong, so.
You know, did her name spark any joy in your life? Then you just throw it out. You throw it out.
Well, this is our last episode. No,
Was this
this is
good?
fun.
Did we
Yeah, this
just
is
ramble
fun.
about Kingdom Hearts for an
We
hour?
totally
Is
did,
anyone
which
going to
is
want to listen to this?
I know that's what we were both worried we were going to do, and it's totally what we did. So hopefully people will enjoy this, and if not, we'll get a little more organized for next time. But are we going to go back to our previous idea for our next recording? Is that the plan?
Yes. We've never talked about it on the show, so
Yeah, because I know
we
you
could
cut it
talk
out.
about
So
it again.
yeah.
Go for it, man.
I thought you were. I was teeing you up. Sure. Yeah. Something that Bobby and I have both been fans of for a long time. Although I don't think either of us really have watched anything before the reboot. Correct?
Oh, that's correct.
Is Doctor Who. We're both Doctor Who fans. I don't know. Are you a big Doctor Who fan, or are you just kind of around for it, or what's your level of
I believe Doctor
interest?
Who fans are called Whovians.
Yeah, but what are you a Whovian?
I don't know. I'm a fan of the show.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
I dressed
We
up as
just.
Rory for Halloween 1 year.
Okay. I dressed up as the Doctor. So
Yeah,
I'm just saying
that's
I'm
boring.
cooler than you are. I was David Tennant Doctor though. It was pretty great.
I was regular Rory.
Yeah. Well, I already got the glasses, so I kind of just had to.
I got a
Anyway.
Centurion outfit.
Oh my God. So you were just a Centurion. You're
Yeah,
just a
but
Roman
my girlfriend
Centurion.
Laura dressed up like Amy, so.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I think Bobby has not yet watched the Jodie Whittaker season, the newest season, which
That's
I
true.
haven't finished, but I've watched a lot of it and it's excellent.
I haven't
I've been a
watched the
fan for
final
a long
Capaldi
time.
season either.
I would say if you want to watch one Jodie Whittaker episode before our next week or next recording, I would watch Demons of the Punjab. It's about halfway through and it's pretty self-contained and it gives you a really good idea of the tone of the
Okay.
series.
So watch
And
Demons
it's
of the Poon. Okay.
Yeah, you're the worst. It takes place in India, racist Bobby.
This is racist Bobby, not normal Bobby. Not to
Regular
be
Bobby had to
confused.
step out for a minute.
Not to be confused with normal Bobby or Data Bobby.
Data Bobby does have a heart. Heart can even live inside of data. Everybody knows this. Yeah, so I think we're just gonna kind of talk about Doctor Who, and I think the plan is to just openly talk about it. So if everybody
Doctor
hates
Who?
what we did this week, maybe we'll have to rethink that. But yeah, just kind of talk about our relationship with that series and what it means to us. I realized recently that I think I kind of unconsciously think to myself whenever I'm trying to figure out how I feel about a political situation, what would the doctor do? And that's not really a joke. I do kind of think of that character a lot when I'm trying to make moral choices in my life. So it's an important one to me. I'm looking forward to it.
Fucking white people.
I know, right?
All right.
Bobby, I'm a boring, basic, cis white dude. I don't know what you want from me. This is what I am.
I don't know what I want either, Ian.
Anyway, that was that kid. You not responding quickly to that made it sound like I was yelling at you.
I'm sorry. I'll do better next time.
Anything else you want to say before we're done for the day?
No.
Okay.
Just until next time, bake scones and eat cookies.
Okay, bye.
Your